Good morning, dear friends. Today is April 22 in the year 2010. We are in the New Hamlet Full Moon Meditation Hall. The Buddha taught that there are four kinds of food. And the fourth is consciousness. Consciousness as a form of food. He said this, nothing can survive without food. Well-being cannot survive without food. The same with ill-being. If there's no food there to nourish it, our love or our hatred, they need food. If hatred is not fed, it will die. If love is not fed, it will die. So what the Buddha said is true. Nothing can survive without food. We have spoken about edible food that we take in through the mouth. We have spoken of food in terms of sense impressions. We consume with our eyes, with our nose, our sense of touch, and so on. When we watch television, we are consuming. We consume with our eyes, our ears, and the mind. And some things can be very toxic. And some things are healthy. So it's very important, this form of food called sense impressions. When we read newspapers, when we watch television, when we listen to conversations, we consume. It means that sometimes we listen to another person and their speech is so toxic, full of despair, of hatred. And if we listen to that for 1 hour, we are consuming a lot of toxins. So conversation is also a form of consumption. And there's also a kind of food called volition. This is the third form of food. And it nourishes us. Without volition, we don't survive. Volition is a kind of desire. The deepest desire in us. Suppose you have the desire to save the planet, to defend human rights. This is a desire that animates you. Your eyes shine. You're active. This desire is a kind of food. So you need to have a good volition. But if you have the desire to get revenge, to become a terrorist who destroys himself and destroys the world, then that volition is another kind of food. So the first source of food is edible food that we take in through the mouth. The second food is the sense impressions that we take in when we're in touch with sounds, shapes, and so on. The third food is volition. That is the deepest, most important desire that we may have. So we really need to look at what desires we're having that are driving us. The Buddha also was nourished by a desire. It was the desire to practice in order to be able to liberate himself. He had the desire to help people to suffer less. That's a good desire. That is a good source of food. So you have a desire. You need to identify what is it. What is your deepest desire? With meditation, we can identify our desires, our intentions. And the fourth source of food is consciousness. We consume consciousness, the collective consciousness. When we sit together, like today, when we listen to the bell sound, we breathe, and each one of us produces, each one of us generates this energy called mindfulness and concentration. With mindfulness, with concentration, we can get deeply in touch with ourself, with the world. If you are dispersed, you cannot get in touch deeply with yourself. If you are dispersed, there's no concentration. You cannot touch life deeply. So mindfulness and concentration help us to get deeply in touch with ourselves and with the world and its wonders. And when we practice in this way, for example, when we listen to the bell sounding, that energy of mindfulness, that energy of concentration, they will become collective energy. And that collective energy penetrates into every one of us. That's food. We feel that peace, that serenity. That is a source of indispensable food for our well-being. If you're in a crowd, a group of people who are afraid, who have hatred, you consume that collective energy of hatred or fear, and that's not good for your health. We need to pay attention carefully to this kind of food called collective consciousness. When we practice walking meditation together, each person with his or her mindfulness and concentration is trying to make steps in such a way that solidity, freedom, and joy are possible with every step. And when we walk together like that, 100 people, 300 people, it will create a really wonderful, powerful energy, a collective energy of peace, of joy, that everyone can benefit from. That's consciousness, the fourth source of food. That's why when we organize a retreat, when we build a Sangha, a practice center, we know that with that Sangha, with that group of people, we will be able to generate good energy. The energy of peace, of brotherhood and sisterhood, serenity, joy. And in that way, everyone can benefit from it. And the friends who come to visit also benefit from that. So let us create all together these zones of peace, of brotherhood, sisterhood, of joy with our practice. I know that in Plum Village we need to walk a number of times every day. And we can walk alone or we can walk together as a group. And that walking has a lot to do with our joy and our health. Of course, physical exercise will do us good. But physical exercise needs to go together with spiritual practice. We don't separate the physical from the spiritual. When you make a step, that step should be spiritual so that it can really heal you. A step is not just a movement that will have an effect on your health. A step is also for the mind. If the mind is not in the step, then the step will not be very healing. You are in Plum Village and you know how to practice walking meditation. When you breathe in, you can make a step at the same time. And you say to yourself, I have arrived. That's the slow walking meditation. One in-breath coupled with one step. I have arrived. We can say, I have arrived. I am home. When we say, I am home, what does that mean? If I am home, it means I don't need to run anymore. I have already come home, and I can enjoy it. Now there are thousands of people waiting for a flight to get home, but you're already home. So with every step like that, you touch your home. When you're capable of touching your home, you no longer need to run to seek. You've already come home. You're comfortable at your home, and that generates the energy of peace. You're really home. And you know it. You don't need to run. So it's the practice of stopping. And this practice of stopping gives you peace. And it is that peace that you generate during the walking that will heal you. It's not just the movement. There needs to be peace in your step to be really healing. There are those among us who have been able to heal themselves thanks to walking meditation. because every step like that can generate solidity and freedom. And it is that solidity and freedom that will create joy and peace, that can nourish us. How? When I take a step and I say, I have arrived. Or when I take a step and I say, I am home. Then stopping is really possible. There are those among us who cannot yet arrive, still seeking, still running, even in their sleep. They're looking for something, always seeking. But when you've already arrived, you know that everything's already here. Life is available. The conditions for happiness are already there. And that way, happiness is possible. Meditation is, first of all, stopping. And when we walk, we practice stopping. We enjoy each step. We don't need to arrive anywhere because we have already arrived. And if you can walk like that, every step will transform you and heal you and give you joy and peace. And when several people walk like that, they generate together this collective energy. And the collective energy of peace will penetrate into each person. And everyone benefits from that. When you walk in this way, when you're capable of arriving with every step, you are a free man, a free woman. Free of what? Free of the past and the future. There are regrets and pain over the past. The past can become a kind of prison for us. There are people who cannot get out of the prison of the past. And joy is impossible for them. So if you can arrive with every step in the present moment, then you are already liberated from the prison of the past. You can touch life with your feet. And there is also fear concerning the future. That uncertainty about the future that prevents you from living the present moment. And if you are carried away by that fear, then you're not really there to live your life deeply. So the future is also a prison. Whereas when you practice walking meditation, you liberate yourself from the past and the future. Every step brings you freedom. Walk like a Buddha. It's possible. To walk like a Buddha means to walk with mindfulness and concentration. Mindfulness, you have it, and concentration as well. When we walk, we concentrate on our breathing and on the step that we make. We can very well invest 100% of our body and our mind into making a step. It's a challenge. One deep in-breath with one step. The mind is with the body and the body is with the mind. When we take a step like that, that step generates the energy of freedom. You're free. You're free and you're also solid. You're solid because you're well established in the present moment. You're not pulled in towards the past or the future. You're really yourself. There's a sovereignty. And true happiness is not possible without that freedom, that solidity. You're solid, you're free, and you're walking. And freedom heals us. Solidity also heals us. In Buddhism, we speak of two aspects of our person, nama-rupa. Nama is the mind and rupa is the body. Rupa is the body and nama is the mind. And in meditation, the body and mind are one. In daily life, perhaps the body is here, but the mind is elsewhere. The mind is caught in the past, in the future, in projects, in anger, in fear. The mind is not there with the body. That is, dispersion is the opposite of concentration and mindfulness. So when we practice mindful breathing, we bring the mind back to the body. When we do walking, we bring the mind back to the body and they become one. The oneness of body and mind. That is the first fruit of the practice, bringing the mind back to the body. When the mind is with the body, then you're well established in the present moment. You can do anything if you're in the present moment. You can get deeply in touch with life because life is available only in the present moment. The past is no longer here. The future has not yet come. There is only the present moment to live. Life is the present moment. That's the address of life. And so, because you're able to come back to the present moment, you're able to touch life. You have an appointment with life in the present moment, and you should not miss your appointment. Breathing and walking can help us not to miss our appointment with life. The body, in principle, the body can heal itself all on its own. The body has the capacity to heal itself. The body knows how to heal itself. When an animal in the forest is wounded, that animal knows exactly what to do to heal himself or herself. The animal looks for a calm, quiet place and lies down to rest. the animal doesn't think about going after food or another animal, that will not allow the healing. The animal just looks for a quiet place and lies down. And after a few days, the animal is healed. The animal knows how to rest. The animal gives his or her body permission to heal itself. We, human beings, in the past, we had that capacity as well. We know that our physical body is intelligent. It is capable of healing itself. But in this modern life, we don't let our body heal itself. We prevent our body from healing itself. We put a lot of pressure on our body. We work it too much. We force our body. We prevent our body from healing itself. So the first thing that the mind can do to help the body is to give the body permission to heal itself. We have to give our body a chance to heal itself. We need to relearn. We need to look at the animals of the forest and relearn. Maybe you have a week or two for your vacation. What's vacation for? It's for resting, recharging, letting the body rest and recover. But most of us don't know how to use those vacation weeks, and then we end up getting more tired. So we need to learn this. Total relaxation, sitting, walking, all those things we need to learn. We need to permit our body to regenerate itself. In the sutra on the full awareness of breathing, the Buddha gave us, recommended us, exercises to help the body to heal itself. The third exercise There are 16. The third is breathing in. I'm aware of my entire body. When you breathe in, you bring your attention to your body for the whole length of the in-breath. You're in touch with your body. Breathing in, I'm aware of my whole body. It's simple, but it's magical. Because when you do that, you bring your mind back to your body. It's a reunion of the mind and body. The mind recognizes the body as being there. That's already something. You can establish yourself really in the present moment with this exercise. Breathing out, I'm aware of my entire body. That's already a reconciliation between the two. And when you are with your body, you can observe there is tension, pressure, there's pain in your body. And you can give the tension, you've given permission for the tension, the stress, and the pain to get stuck in your body. There's an accumulation over several weeks or months. Too much tension, too much stress, too much pressure in the body. It is the mind that has inflicted pains on the body. And difficulties like that. So when you practice this exercise prescribed by the Buddha, you get in touch with reality. There is pressure in the body, tension. It could be the cause of many illnesses. Tension and stress. So you're motivated by the desire to allow those to go out, to release the tension. That's why the Buddha then proposed the fourth exercise, breathing in. I give my body permission to relax. And when you breathe in, when you breathe out, you give that permission. So that is the practice of total relaxation. We can do it in the sitting position, we can do it in the lying down position. And you breathe in such a way that the tension can flow out in the sutra on the contemplation of the body. The Buddha used the following example. A farmer goes up into the loft in his barn, takes down a bag of seeds. He opens up the bag of seeds and allows all the different kinds of seeds to flow out on the floor. With eyes in good condition, he can distinguish all different kinds of seeds. He may say, here are the seeds of corn, here are the seeds of mung bean, here are the white beans. He can distinguish like that. The practitioner does the same thing in the sitting or the lying down position. The practitioner breathes in and says, I am aware of my head. I'm aware of the brain in my head. Breathing in, I get in touch with this brain in my head. Breathing out, I smile to the gray matter in my head. This is the practice of getting in touch with the body. Breathing in, I'm aware of my eyes. For the whole in-breath, you get in touch with your eyes. Your eyes are wonders. Your eyes are indispensable to your happiness, to your well-being. You know very well that with your eyes in good condition, you can get in touch with a paradise of shapes and colors. Because you have eyes, a paradise of shapes and colors is available. That's why it's an amazing thing to have eyes in good condition. And you need to recognize the most precious existence of your eyes. K. Give yourself 5 seconds for one in-breath. And bring your attention to your eyes. Breathing in, I'm aware of my eyes in good condition. And happiness is already possible with that in-breath. Breathing out, I smile to my eyes. You make peace with your eyes. Maybe you have forced your eyes to do too much. The TV, the computer. So this is already a love meditation addressed to your eyes. Your eyes are tired. Your eyes need rest, love. And the Buddha suggested that we do like that. We should start with the brain. We go down to the eyes, ears, nose, tongue. We get in touch with every part of our body. And in the sutra, it is said there are all these different parts of the body. In a hospital, they have scanners. And with the scanner, we can view all the different parts of our body. With the scanner, you have to use x-rays. But with this meditation, we use the rays of mindfulness and concentration. We want to review, go through all the parts of our body. We use mindful breathing to be able to get in touch with every part of the body, and we go down, breathing in. I'm aware of my heart. Breathing out, I smile to my heart, and you continue until you can embrace your whole body tenderly. Maybe you have not had the time to be there for your heart. You smoked, you drank, you stayed up too late at night. You've made your heart suffer by your way of eating, drinking, and working. And your heart has suffered because of that. Now it's time to come back to your heart. And your heart has suffered because of that. Now it's time to come back to your heart. So we have the body and we have the mind. The first thing the body can do for the mind is to allow the body to heal itself. We should not impose too much on the body with our intentions and our ideas. We have to respect the body and give it the chance to heal. This is very important. So the mind needs to make a promise to the body. Sign a peace treaty with the body. Starting today, I'm going to leave you free so you can regenerate yourself. That's a very deep practice. And I'm determined to help you. I will practice total relaxation every day to help you. We need to find ways to make this possible. A sitting of a few minutes. 10 minutes of total relaxation or walking meditation. I will do these things to help you relax. You don't need to run. You can just walk like that and you can generate joy and peace with every step. That's what the mind can do to help the body. There's an alliance between the mind and the body. In the practice of meditation, the body and the mind are the two components of the action of meditation. There's a third thing that joins them together. Without meditation, the mind and body go in opposite or different directions. With the third element of mindful breathing, the mind and the body come back together very quickly. In half a second. So with this instrument called mindful breathing or mindful walking, you can bring your mind back to your body in just a couple of seconds. And every one of us can do this. We can also very well relax in the sitting position. You take a cushion, a chair, and arrange so that the sitting is pleasant. You can stay like that for half an hour. And during the sitting meditation, relaxation is possible. It's possible to make no effort. You don't need to make effort during sitting meditation or walking meditation. And we can learn to do this. We can do walking meditation like this without any effort. And every step is a pleasure. It's a consumption of joy, of peace, of healing. We don't make an effort. We don't strive. We just bring our attention to each step to feel it. And when we walk like that, to generate solidity, freedom, peace, the Pure Land of the Buddha manifests. The kingdom of God manifests. The key to the kingdom is mindfulness, concentration. And that mindfulness directed toward your breath, your steps, opens the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God is now. Or never. So walking meditation is like a stroll in the kingdom of God. It heals you, nourishes you. It's not a chore. But we have to learn how to do it. Every step should bring you joy and peace. And that is possible only when you arrive with each step to your true home. You are home. You have already arrived at your home. And that makes possible that joy, that happiness, that healing. If it doesn't rain, we're going to take a walk outside together after this Dharma talk. Every one of us has that seed of mindfulness inside. We can very well drink our tea with mindfulness. We establish ourselves very well in the present moment. We hold the cup of tea in our two hands. We're really free. Free of the past, free of the future, free of our worries. There's only yourself and that cup of tea. It's wonderful. You're free. And you can get deeply in touch with the tea you drink like a Buddha. It's possible today. You eat your breakfast like a Buddha. You can do it today. Thanks to the energy of mindfulness. The energy of mindfulness is the energy that allows you to know what's happening in the present moment. You have that capacity to be aware of what's going on. You're there like a sentinel. You know what is coming into your citadel. You know what's happening. What's happening is that I'm breathing in. What's happening is that I am taking a step. What's happening is that the cup of tea is in my hands. That's mindfulness. It's the energy that allows you to know what's happening in the present moment. And that's the training. That's the practice. We know what's happening in the present moment. We live deeply this moment. And when we are mindful and concentrated, we can live, we can get in touch more deeply with what's happening. So when I hold my cup of tea, when I'm really myself, when I'm free, I can get deeply in touch with the tea. And when I drink the tea like that, freedom, solidity, joy, peace are possible. When I brush my teeth, I practice the same thing. Brushing teeth, it's a pleasure. And it's possible to brush our teeth in a way that makes joy and freedom possible, not pulled into the past or the future, well established in the present moment, brushing your teeth. You don't have to wait for the end of the brushing to be happy. You're happy while you brush. When you turn on the tap, the water flows out. You want to be there with the water. Get deeply in touch with that water and your fingers. Your fingers that are touching that cool water. If you're really there in the present moment, you touch life and its wonders deeply, and that nourishes you, heals you. Joy is possible. Peace is possible during the time that you are in touch with that water. That water comes from the depths of the earth. It comes from high on the mountains, and it's a miracle that it's right there for you in your kitchen. So happiness depends on us, on you. It depends on your way of getting in touch with life. If you are taken over by fear, worries, and anger, water is nothing, air is nothing, tea is nothing, spring is nothing at all. So we have to liberate ourselves with mindfulness, with concentration. We can establish ourselves in the present moment and deeply touch life in the present moment, we recover our freedom. And when you are yourself, well, established in the present moment, then you have that capacity to generate, to take care of the pain, the anxiety, the fear, that is in you. But if you're continually carried away by the past, the future, your projects, if you're not really there, you cannot. You don't have that capacity to generate these energies. Practice meditation. To practice meditation, we do two things. First of all, we can bring a moment of joy and peace. Every practitioner can bring a moment of joy through breathing, through walking. You can have joy and peace when you drink the tea, when you prepare breakfast. A practitioner needs to be capable of doing that, of bringing a moment of joy. And secondly, a true practitioner should know how to take care of suffering. There's a painful feeling. There's a strong emotion. So the practitioner should know how to recognize that painful feeling, that strong emotion, and how to be there to recognize it, to embrace it, and transform it. So that is a training, the practice. Physical health depends on mental health and vice versa. If the mind can help the body also can help the mind. A healthy body, a light body, a body in good health can very well help the mind. So the mind helps the body, and the body helps the mind. The mind takes care of the mind. When you practice mindful breathing, concentration, and when you know how to take care of a suffering, anger, a fear, the mind is looking after, taking care of the mind itself. And when the mind can look after itself, it can also help look after the body. When we help the body, we help the mind. When we help the mind, we help the body. And the body does the same. When the body has the capacity to heal itself, to recover, to recuperate, it helps the mind. The body knows how to take care of itself. There's a solidarity among all the parts of the body. For example, your lungs have a very close relationship with your digestion. If your digestive system works well, then your lungs can heal themselves quickly, and vice versa. So the body takes care of the body. That's how that's done. If we observe, we can see how the body works, and we see the intelligence of the body. if you cut your finger, you don't have to do much. You just wash it off. The body does the rest. The body knows how to repair, to heal itself. So if the body has the chance to heal itself, to renew itself, then the body can help the mind. So there's a kind of alliance, a cooperation between the body and the mind. And that's why when you listen to the bell of mindfulness and you breathe, you make mindfulness concentration, and the energy of mindfulness penetrates the body, that will have an effect, a therapeutic effect on the body. So, everything that we do in the retreat, take a shower, brush our teeth, it's done with both sides. The mind is there when you take a shower. The mind should be there. When you brush your teeth, the mind should be there. When you walk, the mind should be there. And the quality of the practice is higher in the healing, transformation will be greater. If you want healing, and health to endure, you have to know how to create a good environment. Because healing is impossible without an appropriate environment. It's very important. In Buddhism, we speak of retribution. Retribution. And retribution is the retribution of action. If you sow the wind, you reap the storm. The storm is the retribution. And how do we sow? We sow seeds, first of all, through our thinking. And then through our speech, our words, and then through our physical acts, our bodily actions. Thinking, speech, and action bring retribution. And retribution is twofold. The person with the body, the feelings, perceptions, mental formations and consciousness. The person is made of the five elements called skandhas, the aggregates. When you look into yourself, you are in touch with your body, with your feelings, with your perceptions, with the other mental formations and your consciousness. You are the five aggregates. And meditation has the five aggregates as its object. We meditate on the body, on the feelings, and so on. But you are not just the five aggregates. You are also the environment. You are also this, the environment. This is the environment. When a thought is produced in you, that thought will have effects on your five skandhas and on the environment right away. A thought of hatred, a thought of violence will have a negative effect on your health and on the health of the environment. You are not only these five skandhas, you are also the environment. Every time you can produce right thinking, a thought of understanding, of compassion, of reconciliation, that thought will help you to heal. A thought like that is good for your health. It will have a positive effect on your physical and your moral health. A thought of compassion, understanding. And it will also help the world, the environment, to heal itself. And a good practitioner has to be able to produce these kinds of thoughts every day, several times. A thought of brotherhood, sisterhood, a thought of love, of forgiveness, reconciliation. That is worthy of you. We should produce these kinds of thoughts. It's good for you, it's good for the world. When we say something, those words can have an effect on your health and the health of the world. With your cell phone, with your computer, with your pen, you can practice loving speech, right speech, speech that heals, that supports, that encourages, that forgives. It's possible for a practitioner. You can say things that are right speech, good speech. If you are able to write a letter of love, of forgiveness, of reconciliation, while you write it, the healing already begins in you. And when you finish the letter, it will also bring the healing to the other person. So healing is possible through words. With your computer, you can send an email. With your cell phone, you can send loving speech. And a good practitioner should be able to do this several times a day. And then the bodily action. Right action protects you, protects the other person, protects the planet. It saves, helps, supports, and you have a body to do this. Every time you can do something like that, the healing begins in you. For you and for the world. So acts of mind, speech, and body are called the three aspects of karma. Karma means action. Yep, it's action. And every day we emit, we put out thoughts, speech, and action. We generate karma that will continue us. And when this body disintegrates, the karma is what continues indefinitely. The disintegration of this body is not the end of you, no. You continue through your karma. You have produced thoughts, words, and actions. You're out there in the world, and that is your continuation. A good practitioner can ensure a beautiful continuation into the future with his or her way of thinking, of speaking, and of acting. Don't think, I am this body. No, this body will disintegrate in some years. But I continue on in the world. You can recognize me if you have the eye of mindfulness. It's like the cloud in the sky. Don't think that the cloud can die. It's impossible for a cloud to die. It's completely impossible. Because to die means from something you become nothing. You go from being into non-being. But nothing works like that. It is possible for a cloud to become rain or snow or hail. But it is impossible for a cloud to die, to become nothing. The same is true with every one of us. We don't die. We always continue. And how? Through karma. What I think, what I say, what I do, these things continue me indefinitely. And if the cloud can take another new manifestation, for example, rain or a waterfall, we too, we have many forms of manifestation. And we always continue. That's why karma, the triple action, brings retribution in the form of the five skandhas and in the form of the environment. What I want to say is, you're not just the five skandhas, you're also the environment, and it's possible for us to renew with karma, to create the kind of environment that is favorable to healing. When we build a hospital, it's to promote healing for the sick people who come. There are medicines, there are doctors, there are nurses who work. That is all for healing. But when you build a practice center like Plum Village, that is also for healing. You need other things besides medicine, doctors, and nurses. You need peace, brotherhood and sisterhood, joy, serenity, And you can create all of that, produce that, with the energy of mindfulness, the energy of concentration. We're together in a retreat. What do we do in a retreat? In a retreat, we use the energy of mindfulness, of concentration, to be able to create joy, peace, brotherhood, sisterhood. We use the same energies to be able to deal with our suffering, our painful feelings. We do that. And for that, the mind has to always be with the body. So when you eat, eat with your mind. When you walk, walk with your mind. The spiritual dimension will always be there, should always be there for a genuine healing to be possible. So if it's not raining, we're going to walk together.